Welcome to Betrayal Trauma Recovery, BTR.org. I'm Anne. I'm sure you remember what it was like when you were searching for help, maybe for your husband, hoping to find the right program or therapist. That's why I started podcasting. I supported my husband through 7 years of pornography addiction recovery, and not one therapist during that time told me I was experiencing emotional and psychological abuse and sexual coercion. I didn't want any other woman on the planet to be in the dark. If you're like me, one simple, anonymous way to help spread the word is to click follow or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. While you're there, every 5-star rating also makes this podcast more visible and will help save other women from getting the wrong kind of help, like a couple program that'll make this type of abuse worse. If you've already purchased a copy of my book, Trauma Mama Husband Drama, please circle back and give it a 5-star rating. A lot of women are searching for books about betrayal trauma, and rating Trauma Mama will help them find this podcast, which is free to everyone. If you're like the majority of my listeners, you're experiencing the type of abuse that's invisible and difficult to wrap your head around. Your husband is using porn or having affairs or lying to you, and you're getting the same bad advice about how to improve communication or your relationship. If you need real support, check out our daily group session schedule at btr.org. We'd love to see you in a session today. I'm Anne. I have Amy Kate back with us this week. Welcome back, Amy Kate.
Hi, glad to be back.
So we're going to talk about demystifying the behaviors of sex addicts today. Being a recovering drug addict, I'm sure, has its advantages when you're talking about your ex-husband's sexual addiction and how that worked and how devastating it was. Can you talk about the definition of insanity and where you were in that process of observing your husband's behaviors and being in that chaos and not being able to figure out exactly what was happening? When we're in a relationship with an active pornography addict or an active sex addict, why is there so much chaos? Why is it so difficult to get to the bottom of what is really going on?
To a non-addict person, when you see these behaviors that are insane, that's kind of what they look like, and they make absolutely no sense. You can't wrap your head around why they do the things they do. I tend to think that this all comes from cognitive dissonance. Your brain wants homeostasis. It wants everything to be calm and centered and make sense and not actually be chaotic. Cognitive dissonance is the theory that when you have a certain set of beliefs and morals and standards and your actions don't match that, it creates its own chaos and super uncomfortable feeling inside of you. So you've got somebody that knows that porn is some version of cheating. They know they're not supposed to. They know they're hurting their wife. They know that having that affair is going to devastate their wife, but they're still doing it. In order to have those two things balance within the brain, something has to change. They have three choices, essentially. They can change their beliefs. So they can somehow decide that cheating is okay. They can decide that porn is okay. That doesn't usually happen, though, because usually our beliefs are our beliefs. They can change the action. They can stop doing those behaviors, but that's not as easy as it sounds. Or they can change their perception. When they change their perception, that's where you tend to see all the other crazy-making behaviors that drive us absolutely insane.
Talk about that a little bit. You mean like their perception of their wife?
Their perception of everything starts to change. Essentially, when they're changing their perception, they're changing their reality to make their behaviors fit what they believe. We'll use lying. That's probably one of the most rage-igniting things when it comes to us partners is the lying. The lying drives us absolutely insane. But the addict will change the way he views things. Like the female that he's talking to all the time and ends up having an emotional affair with, that she's just a friend, I swear. I don't even think she's pretty. I have no idea how that porn site is in the history. Maybe it's a virus. So he's creating this reality that's not even real. And the really ironic part is he starts to believe it. The brain has to come back to that homeostasis where things just make sense, or it's a horribly uncomfortable feeling. So they start to believe their own lies, which is, it's insanity. That's what it feels like for me as a recovering addict. When I'm in that place, it feels like insanity.
Especially because then you have two totally compartmentalized lives going on. The one life where you're this good person and you don't engage in these behaviors and your explanations make sense. And then the other life where all of these things are actually really happening. You really are engaging in these behaviors. You really are lying. And so it's almost like you've got Jekyll and Hyde going on in the same body.
Well, Jekyll and Hyde was actually an analogy for an alcoholic originally. The whole, you know, boxes and compartmentalizing, that's a huge part of addiction. When the addict is actively engaged with his family, his addiction doesn't exist. He closes that box and it doesn't exist. And then when he's acting out in his addiction, his family doesn't exist. And they're two completely separate worlds. So when they collide, like the wife finds something on the history of the computer, he has to figure out a way to make the two make sense. Lying is usually a really good way to do it. Justifications is another way that they can alter their reality and their perception of what's going on to make things balance out. For example, they'll say things like, well, it's just porn. It's not a real person, so it's not that bad. It's not even cheating. I'm a man. I can't help it. I have a high sex drive, and besides, all men look at porn, right? I mean, it's a guy thing. It's just what they do. I only do it a few times a month. It's really not a problem.
Yeah, these justifications are very interesting, I think, especially when they say, like, the woman wants to be doing this. When you look at it from the porn industry point of view, we know that the women who are in the porn industry are not treated well. Many of them are on drugs. Many of them have been exploited. They are miserable doing their job. And the time that they spend in the pornography industry is very, very short. Most of them don't spend a lot of time doing it because it's so difficult for them. I've talked with someone who was on the other end. He produced porn for a while and then he stopped producing it. And he said, I always knew I was ruining the lives of the women that I filmed, but I just never thought about the people who are watching it and how their lives were also being ruined. And so I think that it's very difficult for them to realize that they're hurting their wife, they're hurting themselves, and they're also hurting the woman that is being exploited. They're also hurting the people that are in the pornography. And so it's very important to teach people that pornography creates a demand for sexual exploitation, and that demand must stop. That as long as people are viewing pornography, there will also be sexual exploitation and sex slavery. All of these justifications surrounding this make it very difficult for men to see the truth that they are using and exploiting other people and that they're harming themselves and their own family members. So instead of accepting that, they end up blame shifting and lying and all the things that you're talking about, right?
Yeah. My analogy that I have for my own addiction, it's like I have this little person in my head. I actually say it's a little demon. It has one goal in life, and that's to get me to use my drug, whatever my drug of choice is. You know, these people would be porn. Mine was drugs. It will do the craziest things. It'll twist words to convince me that these lies make sense. Like, it really makes sense. I really deserve to take this pill because I've had a really bad day. Or I really deserve to watch that porn because my wife won't have sex with me. And you literally believe it, even though a sober brain knows that it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And so it's all balancing back to that cognitive dissonance. It's got to balance itself out.
Talk about blame shifting. That's another way that addicts balance themselves out.
That's a super fun one. That was sarcastic, obviously. That one is so damaging to women because one of the big ones is they will blame the way the wife looks, or they will blame the weight the wife has gained or the activities that the wife is willing to do. If she did such and such sex act, I wouldn't have to watch porn. Or if she took care of herself and lost some weight, I wouldn't have to watch porn. Or if she wasn't such a mean, demanding person, then I wouldn't need all this stress relief. Or I've had a really bad day at work. All my customers are jerks and I've been treated like crap by my boss and I deserve this treat.
In my case, I was too much. I asked too many questions. I was too consistent. I was too demanding and controlling because I was a woman of my word and I had integrity. And I was trying to figure out what was going on, and I was not going to stop until I had the answers. In my marriage, I was too much. Although at the end, he told me that I was not attractive and started going down that route. But before that, it was that I was too much. And then it became that I wasn't enough. And it was very hurtful to me. Those comments, they ring in my ears still. Yeah. The blame types of things.
Yeah, I want to.
You can't get better if you refuse to take responsibility for your actions.
Right. Mine was very good at projecting. Like, he started isolating himself from the family. We would have things that we were going to do, like carve pumpkins, for example. And I'd say, come on, let's go carve pumpkins. And he would say he was working in his office, and he wasn't. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, hey, let's go to the park. Let's go do this. Pretty much, you know, anything I was trying to get him to engage in the family, he kept refusing. Well, when Discovery came out, he said that he cheated because I didn't want him involved in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, he literally would flip everything around. And then he would say things like, I didn't want sex enough. And the reality was that I was sex starved and right. turned down all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mine stopped initiating.
Yeah.
Mine didn't ever initiate in the first place. And then I stopped initiating and he didn't ever do it. And I'm sure he tells people she wouldn't have sex with me. And I'm like, well, you only initiated twice during that 6 months where I didn't initiate. And both of those times were immediately after I had been severely emotionally abused. I wasn't safe. And then you didn't ever try when I did feel safe. So yeah, that makes right. sense. But he doesn't tell people because I didn't initiate safe sex for 6 months.
Right.
That gaslighting is pretty intense and can be very traumatizing. That gaslighting is part of the emotional abuse.
Yeah. And the gaslighting for me, it made me feel crazy because I didn't know my reality. And that's such a hard thing to describe, not knowing my reality. But when everything is twisted, and all I had was him and I in the beginning. I didn't have anybody to tell me, okay, no, that's not right, or that's not making sense. I don't know what's up or down. Mm-hmm. And it's all because of the gaslighting. He would say something, and then 5 minutes later, I would repeat it back to him, and he would say, I never said that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm yeah. like, yes, you did. But by the end of the conversation, I'm going, well, did I? Like, right. I really didn't know.
Yeah. Or they say, I know I said that, but that's not what I meant. I meant this other thing. Right. And you're like, no, this is what you meant. This is exactly what you said. But now you're denying it.
Right.
It's very strange. Yeah. Part of the reason we bring this up is not just to rehash our own trauma. It's to educate women about the behaviors that they can expect so that they know they're not crazy, so that they can start to observe their husband's behavior to see if their husband is emotionally safe. My number one goal with betrayal trauma recovery is to teach women what these safe behaviors look like so that they can start to establish safety for themselves, because you cannot heal from trauma if trauma is continually happening to you. So really quickly, I just want to go over these things one more time. We've got lying, justifying, blame shifting, and gaslighting.
No matter what's going on with him whatsoever, there is hope for you. Your life can change. Your life can get better. You don't have to stay stuck right where you're at. It will get better.
You are worth it. That's what I want to say to these women.
Amen.
You are worth it. God loves you and he wants you to be safe. There is a little bit of cognitive dissonance with us because we think, well, God also wants me to submit to my husband, or he also wants me to be a loving, kind, forgiving, service-oriented wife, right? So there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance in there with the wives of sex addicts who are wanting a whole, peaceful, loving family. But God is telling us, please, I love you. You are worth it. Establish safety for yourself. Amy Kate, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate the time you've taken to talk with us.
Thank you for having me.
If this podcast was helpful to you, please help us reach other women by pushing that follow or subscribe button and giving us a 5-star rating. Thank you for helping get the word out. Your donations keep this podcast going. Go to our website, btr.org, scroll to the bottom, click on Support the BTR Podcast. And until next week, stay safe out there.